Hello and welcome to You're Not From Around Here, a podcast recorded in Tokyo.
Let's get this show broad.
Welcome to the second episode of You're Not From Around Here, a podcast broadcasting out of Japan. As you just heard in the music, I probably shouldn't do that, but there you go. The first episode got a really positive response, so thank you everyone for listening. And today we're going to be talking to a guy called Anthony Davis down in Odawara, who, well, we're going to let him tell his own story, really. But, you know, it's been a really, really busy month for me. And I've been going to the gym, I've been listening to other podcasts. One's related to Japan, one's not related to Japan. And there's a lot of talk of doing reviews on iTunes, of liking it, of donating and stuff like that to make podcasts sustainable and the rest of it. And don't bother doing any of that stuff. I mean, this is probably... We don't know how long this is going to go on for. And tonight is the 18th of February and we're recording this podcast. And the last one went out on about the 24th of January. And what we've found over the last month is that really there's not enough time to be doing this sort of thing to the level that we'd like to be doing it at for now. And that doesn't really matter. We're going to deliver episodes when we can deliver episodes. We're going to talk to people when we can talk to people. And we just really hope that you continue to listen to us. Again, this is You're Not From Around Here. I'm Richard Smart.
And I'm Adrian Story.
So here we go. Anthony.
Yes.
Anthony Davis.
That's me, correct, yes.
Yeah. We're going to talk about three things today, and two of them are language and tea ceremony. But for the start, what I'm wanting to discuss is the experience of being a member of the LGBT community in Japan, particularly with you're now living in Odawara, right?
Correct. Yeah. Mm. So there's not a really solid rocking LGBTQIA community down here that I'm aware of, but there are people around, but it's not a community, you know. There's no venues, there's nothing happening, there's no action to speak of.
Right. So, and I mean, you're living with your partner now.
Yes.
And you're living in, like, it's a semi-rural area, that's right?
It's difficult to describe. Like, it's an extension of the suburbs of Tokyo that just happens to be 80 kilometers away from the center of Tokyo. We're in a neighborhood. It's a small city, Odawara, of, I don't know, 80, 100,000 or something. I forgot to check. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
But, I mean, we're connected to Tokyo and sort of feel like a really, really outskirts area of Tokyo, but different prefecture, of course, Kanagawa. So, we live in a neighborhood. I don't really think that the people around us have clicked that we're a gay couple, but they might have heard some unusual noises in the middle of the night. Gay noises.
Okay.
Yeah. So. But they've, you know, they've been watching these boys, not boys, us, you know, guys, come and go together for 6 years in this house we've lived. And I don't know. They bring us pickles, homemade pickles and homegrown vegetables and stuff like that. So we're sort of part of the community, but we don't go out in our pink hot pants or anything like that. So.
Right. Do you reserve the pink hot pants for when you come into Central Tokyo?
Strictly for Central Tokyo.
Me too, to be fair.
So everyone does, yeah.
I'm sort of curious about what your neighbours think then. I mean, I know you through Twitter, right? On Twitter the other day, you mentioned that you're planning to move to Kobe pretty soon. Yes. And some of your neighbours have been like, oh, who's the lucky girl then?
This was one of the women at tea ceremony. Yeah, she almost started crying. She looked really emotional when I said I'm moving to Kobe. And then she said, where did you meet her? And I'm thinking, we haven't specifically, you know, talked bedroom action details, but you have actually met my boyfriend on numerous occasions when we bumped into you at the tea ceremony implements shop and things like this. You should have clicked by now. But apparently, I don't know.
Do you think that's because it would just be the furthest thing from her mind? Like, because my experience of I'm as you know, not family, but I have a lot of experience with the gay community in Japan. Yep. I hang out with a lot of people who are part of that community. My experience has been that normal is probably not the word I want to use, but normal, yeah, for want of a better word, normal people would not assume that that person who you were with was your boyfriend. They would never assume that.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the thing. There's not a great deal of visibility here. It's starting to become a bit of a news item now and then, but it's a sort of I have this situation in certain areas in Australia where I come from as well. If you have not seen into a community or into a certain world, you just can be completely unaware of it. Until I came out as a gay man in Australia, like after I came out, I'd walk down the shopping street or whatever, the high street, and I'd oh my God, there's a gay couple. And before I had come out, I'd been pretty much oblivious to it. And I think that's the general case here. I think most people in the community, unless it's paraded in front of them with a nameplate on it, just don't pick up on it. They don't pick up on it at all.
So do you regret not parading it around the community with a nameplate?
I tended to parade it around in Australia quite a bit. Everyone at work in Australia knew that I was gay and ribbed me about it, and all kinds of jolly stuff went on there. So it was I do sort of regret being in the closet here, but I was working as a English language, like an assistant language teacher at elementary schools just around this area. And so all my contacts down here through school, they're all school teachers and so on. And I always was a little bit reticent to be a big queen down here, because that might be taken the wrong way. You know, you were looking after our children for 3 years. People might start to think, you know, something unpleasant or something. I don't know. I guess that's one reason I sort of hesitated, is because of my teaching background in this community down here.
Okay.
Anthony, do you mind if I ask you, because it's, I mean, you came out in Australia and then you moved to Japan.
Yep.
Were you aware of the way society generally viewed homosexuals in Japan before you came? Because I mean, how did that affect your decision in any way? Or
so can I just add, I mean, how does society here view homosexuals? I mean, I don't really. I'm not on the front line, so to speak. So both questions.
I think it's a bit of a don't ask, don't tell mentality. I think you know probably from your own experiences that you can be in a workplace and someone will say, oh, so-and-so got married yesterday. And you're like, what? I didn't know he was going to get married. And you're like, yeah, to so-and-so. And it's like they're working in the same section in the office or something, and all this time you never realized that they were in a relationship, and suddenly they come to work one day and they're married and they announce it. Mm. And this kind of thing I've seen time and time again, even in straight situations in Japan. So I think there's a lot of areas where private life is simply not discussed. Mm. You know, be private and public is quite separated here. Mm-hmm. Back to Adrian's question. I mean, I came here when I was – the first time I came here, I was 19. That's
a couple of years ago now. That's a very long time ago.
Last millennium. And, literally.
Who was stopping the chance?
and I've been back and forth on holidays and had lots of Japanese friends in Australia, so I've been fairly conscious of the way society works here. I've got some Japanese gay friends that I've had going back, stretching back 20 years and whatever. So, yeah, I was aware of what to expect, I guess. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, my relationship with Japan or whatever, I mean, I love the culture, love the people, but I guess more than the culture, in fact. And that's why I came here. I take the pluses and the minuses, you know, for what they are.
So just to clarify, I mean, what did you expect?
I expected exactly what I got, I think. Just no one – I think the most difficult thing is just not knowing how to – I'd like a little bit more of an open lifestyle. I think if I was living in central Tokyo or something like that, I'd have friends like you guys that I'd hang out with, and they'd be happy to have my partner along to dinner parties, and no one would give a stuff. Whereas in the country here, it's, you know, he has his social circle and I have my social circle, and they rarely cross over, and neither of them know the truth. The truth is out there.
Do you often come into Tokyo with your partner to like to Nichime, for example? I mean, I want to talk to you a little bit about Nichime, because I think that's if we're going to talk about LGBT issues in Japan, we need to talk about Nichime, right? So I'm just wondering if that's somewhere you go.
He's not into the scene at all, so. No, we never go there. When he's out of town or something, I might go there to meet with friends for drinks or something like that. But
right. It's
not a place that I go to much. Before I met him, which was like I've been here almost 9 years now, and on this particular occasion, and we've been together about 7 years. And before that, I was going out there quite often, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I mean, because. Again, I'm as a straight man, I kind of enjoy it because I mean, without this being about me, I've got a lot of gay friends. I have a history with the community for a number of reasons that we won't go into. But Nichime is like kind of quite an interesting place for me, having lived in Japan and not really had any gay friends, which was a bit of a shock to me after my life before I lived in Japan, because I would say a good half of my friends were gay or lesbian before that.
Right, yep.
And so when I first came to Japan, it was a bit of a shock that there weren't, you know, there weren't more out people around generally. Yeah. Like I was years before I knew anyone. And so then when I first started going to Nichime was mainly because I am interested in that culture because of my job and because of lots of other reasons. But I find it quite a fascinating place. I mean, it's definitely a concentration of the culture into one area that I think even in cities that I've lived in other countries that are much more, and I'm going to do air quotes for anyone who's listening, gay friendly. It's still quite a unique kind of area, even compared to other gay areas in other cities. So
it's weird because it's very sort of closed shop or something in Nichome. Like I've only sort of discovered recently how many hundreds of bars and so on there are down there, and a lot of them I don't have access to anyway because I'm not Japanese. But you can walk one street away and be completely unaware that this is a gay area, you can walk down that street, the main streets in the Nichome, the gay area, in the daytime, and you wouldn't realize that it was a gay area at all.
Yeah, no idea.
And even at nighttime, it's not really out there sort of thing.
I don't know. On a Saturday night, Andy, you'd have to be practically blind to notice.
Yeah, all right, Saturday night, I'll give you that. The interesting thing, I think, backtracking quite a bit now, when I was living in Australia, this is after being in Japan for a year, this is when I was in my 20s doing my second degree, had a Japanese flatmate, and we're still good friends. And we lived together for about 6 months, and this was during the time that I was coming out. And I just got this feeling that, I had to be honest with my flatmate. Like, I was going to, you know, have my boyfriend over, and I just wasn't, you know, I was the man, the person who had the contract on the house. I wasn't going to be secretive in my own house. Like, if he wasn't going to deal with it, we'd do something. He could move out or whatever, but this was my house, and I was paying the rent and everything. I should have the freedom to be who I am in there. This was when I was coming out. I didn't know how to deal with it, so I wrote him a little letter, and I slipped it under his door, and we kept writing back and forth to each other. We're living in the same flat. We wrote back and forth to each other for about 24 hours, and he was writing about how he'd accept that and blah, 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 blah. And about a month later, a gay friend of mine on the scene said, "You know your flatmate's gay." And I'm like, "What?" And he said,
"Brilliant."
And he said, "Yeah, my flatmate hooked up with him through an ad in a newspaper." And then I had to confront my flatmate and say, "That guy that you keep bringing back and he stays in your room overnight, like, you guys are actually, you know, I told you where I'm at and you didn't tell me."
What did he say?
This epitomizes the entire attitude here.
You didn't hear the gay noises?
I didn't want to hear. I didn't.
Oh, yeah, come on. You kind of wanted to.
You were the old woman at the tea ceremony.
Exactly. But, yeah.
How did you meet your boyfriend?
How everyone meets these days, online.
Just a dating site or?
Yeah, Gaydar. We found each other. We met for a one-off and just kept meeting, and there you go.
Oh, perfect.
That's about the only way that you'd meet someone down in this area, I think, online.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because when you were talking before about how you both have quite separate lives, I'm guessing that, you know, your friends and your partner's friends down in Odawara are both sort of just, you know, families or, you know, colleagues from work who don't talk about what they're doing outside of work beyond going out for drinks and making small talk or whatever.
And your point is, what's the question?
Yeah, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, lovely answer.
Yeah, my contacts down here are mostly colleagues from when I was teaching, and then they've introduced me to the tea ceremony, and then another one's introduced me to calligraphy and so on. So I've got sort of small groups of people I know through there. Uh-huh. And his colleagues are from his old work, and that's it, yeah.
Okay. So
I could talk about this for hours, but I'm conscious that we shouldn't talk about this for hours. So we should move along into...
Yeah, I mean...
We've avoided all of the juicy questions that Richard was dying to ask, but...
Oh, really?
Have we?
Oh, maybe not. That's not good. Interesting thing I'll mention now, because I think partly as a result of sort of talking about coming on here and me being quite ignorant of where it's all at in the gay community in Japan, because I really don't... Yeah, I mean, I feel I should be more involved, but I'm not. So a couple of weeks ago, we got together a group from Twitter specifically asking for you know, the gay people come, who we're all connected already, to come out of the woodwork. I posted, said, we're having a tweet up for queer people, come along. And suddenly a few people contacted me. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't realize you were. A couple of them I knew, but a couple of them were quite a surprise. And we got together for 2 weeks in a row. And yeah, it was kind of interesting. All of them already had boyfriends or girlfriends or whatever. And all had sort of different experiences, but and I have no point to make there. Thank you.
No, I'm more interested. I mean, again, I could talk about this for hours. So I'm interested in what questions that we haven't asked you that you want to be asked about it.
Yeah, Davis.
Do any of them involve things that I probably shouldn't say on air? Butt plugs.
Yeah, no, they do. They all do. So
they all involve those things that we could buy if we were to go to Nijime in one of those shops. Black nude, yeah, for example.
What?
Anyway, linguistics.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Naturally into linguistics.
It's a perfect segue into linguistics.
So you work here as a translator, right?
Yes. Yep.
How did
yep.
you get into that?
I studied Japanese from when I was in high school in Australia for 4 years at high school, and then because I was not good at doing anything except for Japanese by the end of high school, that's what I majored in university. Mm-hmm. After university, I worked for Japanese travel companies in Australia as a tour guide and a tour coordinator and so on. So I've always sort of used Japanese. Mm-hmm. The bubble burst, the bottom fell out of the travel market in Australia for Japanese tourists, and I shifted into regular travel. And then I wanted to come back to Japan. And this friend of mine that we just discussed before, who was my straight acting gay flatmate, asked me to come back and help him with setting up his company. So I came back mm-hmm. 9 years ago, whatever. And but when I came back, my Japanese was really, really rusty again. So I had to sort of relearn it. The first 3 years I was teaching English, and then it was like, well, why am I teaching English? Because I'm a little bit, you know, I've got Japanese and I'm not using it. And so I wanted to, I'd always had this dream of being a translator, probably because I didn't realize what it entailed. And some friends, some very old friends of mine said, you know, take the leap of faith just to do what you want to do. And so I quit my teaching job and hung out until I could become a freelance translator, and it just happened.
So, I mean, what sort of work are you doing now? Is it corporate, literary?
Yeah, it's all corporate. Look, if I could, I'd be translating love letters for a living, but there's not a lot of call for it.
I can send you some really shitty ones in Japanese if that helps.
If you pay for it, I'm happy to translate them. So the work is mainly corporate. I'm registered with a few agencies, and they email and say, we've got a job, can you do it? And you do it and you email it back and everyone's happy and then you get paid. So. Mm. So it started as a trickle, and then when they sort of got used to me and realized I was doing the work on time and wasn't too bad a translator, it turned into a bit of a flood. Mm. And now that's all I do.
Do you ever get overwhelmed with like the volume of work that you have, or it's manageable? You turn down contracts or whatever.
Yeah, you just turn down jobs if you can't handle them. So you've got to sort of know your own capacity and manage it. But yeah, I mean, if you bite off more than you can chew or whatever, then you end up awake at night till 3 working or something, and up again at 6 in the morning finishing a job or begging for more time, so on. So yeah, so far so good.
And you don't, I mean, how many languages do you speak?
Yes, I'm starting to get good at speaking English now. No, I.
Well, I mean, it's debatable, to be honest. Australian is not really English. Let's not overstate your case too much.
Sorry, I'm sorry. yeah, I just speak Australian. That's all I can speak. I know where you're coming from. I like languages a lot. I only lay claim to being able to speak English and Japanese fluently, but I've dabbled a lot in a lot of languages.
Sorry, Rich was moving, so we had a slight audio issue that I'll have to edit out afterwards. I told him not to move. He will never listen to me.
So I've dabbled in other languages. When I did French for a year in high school, didn't understand how it worked because it was my first experience studying language, so I switched to Japanese because people said that the teacher was cool. Yeah. That's how this whole thing started. When I went to university, they said, if you're doing Japanese, you want to combine that with Mandarin Chinese, because that's the natural combination language to do. And that was a little bit of a misleading. Let's just put it like that.
What, Mandarin's too difficult, or it's just you can't fit both languages into the same space at the same time in your brain?
Well, I mean, they share some commonalities in the writing system, but that's all. There's links there, a lot of borrowed vocabulary and so on, but it's a totally different kettle of fish. So I'm very glad I did it, but I think the people who were sort of recommending it may have had their information a bit screwed up anyway.
Anthony, is Mandarin a tonal? Is it tonal language like Thai or Vietnamese or anything? It's got
exactly.
More, so those. Yeah. I mean, I can speak. I lived in Thailand for a few years. I can speak a basic amount of Thai. And as a native English speaker, I think the thing that Japanese is not by any means easy, but at least it's not a tonal language. And for the biggest struggle I've had with other languages, which I'm by no means at your level of any kind of understanding of any of them, but tonal languages to me are just, they make my brain explode.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I did Thai in Thailand when I was backpacking years ago. I went to the language school there, AUA, American sort of run school there that was teaching Thai. And that was really good because living there, the teacher was just excellent, would zoom in and put her mouth almost up against you, almost kissing and make sure that you were making the correct mouth movements and so on. And
sounds great. Got,
yeah, well, not too bad. She was about 60.
getting worse.
That's all right. I like older women. It's fine.
Tonal languages, I guess, are quite difficult for people that are not used to them. And I'm with you, Adrian. Even doing Mandarin and Thai, I'm a bit bemused by how it all works. But the thing that got me about, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, my ex, who was Vietnamese, his mother was born in China, and she would have come in at the time of the Communist Revolution to escape. So she spoke Chinese, she had to learn Vietnamese, and then during the Vietnam War she was in Laos for a time, so she learned how to speak Lao, and then she came to Australia as a refugee and learned English. And this is like 60-year-old woman, not really well educated or anything, that can speak four languages. And I just sort of realized that if you need to, I think it's a human trait that we can, I'll tell all of your listeners, I think you can just learn languages. I think it's innate ability of human beings. This is my fundamental belief.
No, I think I really believe that because I have spent time in various countries and become able to communicate with the people around me in their native language. I'm, again, by no means a linguist or a cunning linguist, if we're going to continue with the entendres. But
I don't understand what you're talking about.
No, well, clearly. One day I'll show you. It's pretty disgusting. But
thank you.
So how many languages do you speak then?
So, all right, I did English, we got Japanese, we got a little bit of Mandarin. Mandarin is all right. I went there on holidays. I can tell a taxi driver where to go or whatever. My Thai is really, really rusty. I'm working very hard on French at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I went to France the past 2 years. I've been three times for a month or so each time and trying to nut this down. Mm-hmm. And the French is, it turns out that English is just mispronounced French is what I've discovered. And French is a lot easier to learn, I'm finding, being closer to English than Thai, for example.
Right. Yeah. Funny that.
But I keep dabbling. Like, I was traveling in Indonesia for a while and I tried to learn. When I was traveling, I'd run into backpackers who would go to shops or whatever, and why can't they understand simple English? Why can't you understand simple Thai? Yeah, why can't you learn a few words in Indonesian, at least numbers and hello, goodbye, thank you? Mm. And that's where I started from, just seeing people trying to force locals who never would plan to leave their country or whatever, trying to force them to understand English or expect them to understand English. Mm. And I thought, no, that's the wrong approach. I need to be the one trying to learn the language of the country I'm in.
Okay. So speaking of forceful locals, can you tell us about how you ended up learning tea ceremony? And what tea ceremony actually is.
Yeah, that's less a language problem and more a cultural problem. I've always been curious about tea ceremony. An exchange student, a Japanese exchange student I was friends with in high school in Australia, was a practitioner of tea ceremony. And I knew about this. And one day when we were becoming quite good friends, I said, well, can you do it? You know, can you show us it? And he's like, no. And I'm like, what is this mysterious thing that you do that you can't show your good friend? And I realize now that it's just impractical. It's just not possible to, you know, drop into a friend's place and say, let's do tea ceremonies. You know, it's harder than Dungeons and Dragons or something. You know, it just doesn't happen like that.
Oh, that's a really nerdy reference.
Yeah.
we can talk about that another time. And when I was here, I was sort of curious. I knew it was a part of the Japanese culture. I had no idea what it was. But one of the teachers at school kept asking me, will you come along and have a look at our tea ceremony? And I said, yeah, I really want to come. I really want to come. But, you know, this week I've got plans to Nichome, and I'm not. I didn't say that, but she kept saying Saturday night. I'm like, no, Saturday night's a night. Adrian told me you're so busy in Nichome. You know, oh, wait a second, we hadn't met then.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
So I'm getting mixed
officially
up.
Anyway, I didn't tell you my name that time, I don't think.
So, but finally I gave in because it was like, you can only refuse so many times. And so I went along to the tea ceremony and it was very strange. We're in a little room. So you had to sit this way. You had to come into the room this way and slide along the floor and sit in a certain way and blah, blah, blah. And I was just being told, do this, do that at this time. And it was all really, really confusing. And then after we'd drunk the tea and all the difficult stuff had happened, we're sitting there while they do the sort of closing ceremony, if you like. They tidy up all the implements, but you sit there and wait as a guest. And the tea master took a ladle of fresh cold water and tipped it into the kettle, which was hot boiling water. And there was a whoosh. And the steam rose up, and it was just total silence, and it was mesmerizing. This was the best part of the tea ceremony for me the first time, was just this whoosh, and the steam sort of extinguished everything, and it was like the room that we were in and the people there, that was the whole world, and there was nothing else. And this was just one incredible moment. And then afterwards, we're tidying up and taking off our little white socks and all this kind of thing out in the change room. And the woman says, and so it'll be three times a month and it'll be 5,000 yen every time, every month, I mean. So see you again next week. And I'm like, yes, okay. Because I didn't know how to say no. I hadn't read the book, you know, the Japan Who Can Say No or whatever. I just wasn't aware of how to do this, so...
So they have a word for
that's
it.
That's how
apparently.
I got into tea ceremony. What's that?
They have a word for no, apparently. I've never heard anyone use it, but...
No, that's right. I still don't know how to use it.
You got press ganged into doing tea ceremony, effectively.
Exactly. But now I'm sort of at the Fight Club level, so there's things that I do there that I can't discuss. No, I'm serious. I've gone up certain rungs in the ladder, and now I'm doing the secret practices of tea ceremony. I'm not allowed to discuss them with you.
You are actually serious, aren't you?
You've started to work me out, Richard. You know that when I say the stuff that sounds really stupid, that's when I'm serious. Yeah, I am really serious.
Wow. Okay.
It's like a ninja. There's like, so it's ninja level tea ceremony.
I'm still a couple of levels away from that. Yeah, I can't vanish when the steam goes. Rises.
No. Sounds a bit like Scientology, but
with... Yeah, it does sound a lot. What thetan level are you at, Anthony, by the way?
But, I mean, this is not really a question. It's just one thing I was thinking about after talking to you about tea ceremony a couple of weeks ago is...
Yep.
With, like, to a novice, it seems really repetitive, right? That you go in a room and you do things like, you know, you put the kettle at a certain angle and you pick up the cup in a certain way and stuff like that. But I was thinking that in what sort of circumstance would that be interesting? And, you know, there must have been so many people 5 years ago when the tsunami hit who were kind of into tea ceremony. And then they couldn't do it because they were evacuated, their homes had been destroyed, and everything that was terrible was going on. And just that first tea ceremony after you'd sort of begun the process of recovery must have been one of the most wonderful things to experience if you were into it. Like, does that get to an essence of what tea ceremony is? See, there was a question, sorry.
Yeah, I like the way you ask questions. So, you avoid the yes-no questions. And the answer to that question, what is the word? My English is so bad these days.
Truth.
Tea ceremony is ridiculous.
That seems to be the word.
In a way, yeah. It's because you all... get dressed up and you sit in certain ways and whatever. And at the end of the day, you're just having a cup of tea. And the essence of tea ceremony is just that, to give someone a pleasant piece of hospitality. You're just making them a cup of tea and making them feel comfortable and, you know, exchanging pleasantries and, you know, reflecting on the seasons, the changes of the seasons and that kind of thing. In its essence, it's really, really simple, and it is that. But, you know, when you kind of analyze things, because you know people here like to analyze things, when you analyze things to the nth degree, having the bowl facing a little bit, you know, in this direction and you know, having the kettle a little bit closer to the guest in the winter and a little bit further away in the summer, these kind of things are what you realize when you've analyzed how to have the perfect dinner party, for example, in the West. Mm-hmm. You know, where would the flowers be? When the guests come, what should the entrance room look like? We do the same thing, but this has been analysed to the nth degree, such that if I put a certain implement down on the tatami flooring in a certain place, the tea master who's sort of looking over will move it a centimetre. And I'm going... okay. It's not right or wrong, but he's got the aesthetic and he can look at it and go, well, if you put it a little bit this way, it's going to be more visible to the guest. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. Or there'll be a balance created there or an asymmetry created there that's pleasing to the senses. So, you know, you can analyze it to the nth degree and go, wow, this is really complicated and ridiculous. Or you can just say, well, it's just trying to give someone a good time.
Great. Okay. So
I have a very, what's the word for it? OCD sort of part of my character since I was a child. I think I mentioned this the other day that I, if I, for about 5 years or 10 years or something, if I walked through a room, I'd want to be having equal left steps as right steps. Or if I stepped on a crack in the pavement with my left foot, I'd make sure that I stepped on a crack with my right foot to even things out. So I've always had a slight obsession with creating this kind of aesthetic in all that I do. I'm not a neat person or anything like that, but I can really, really relate to this strange obsessiveness of tea ceremony because it's a part of my personality that I've sort of kept repressed since I was a child to try and fit into normal society. Okay. And now I found these people where we can be obsessive together. We don't have to fit in.
I remembered the question that you're talking about.
Yeah.
The LGBT thing that I forgot to ask. It's about the adoption situation, right?
This is super weird. This is weird. Please explain.
You know what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, the marriage is not on the cards here, and that apparently there has been.
Who's your daddy?
Who is your daddy? Exactly. Well, because, as we're all aware, but we find a little bit curious, is that when a family, a straight family here or whatever, has all daughters and they need a son to carry on the family name, they can adopt their daughter's husband-to-be into the family. So he adopts the family name. So they adopt him as a son and then they marry. That weirds me out because then brother and sister are marrying. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you can adopt people for these kind of reasons. And I have heard of, not personally or anything, but I have heard that it is the case that certain Japanese gay couples adopt the boyfriend into, you know, the guy will adopt his boyfriend will be family.
I heard that the reason why that happens a lot in the gay community is because if one of you gets sick, the other person isn't allowed into the hospital.
Yes.
Because you have to be a family member. And you're not a family member. So the one partner will adopt the other partner for eventualities such as that.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. But I've never actually heard of anyone who's done it. Have you met or heard anyone?
I've met several people who've done it. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I mean, as a gay couple, are there issues that you face in the more bureaucratic aspects of society, like you mentioned hospitals, but are there other issues that you
Yeah, well, face? I guess we're just as friends, so we've got no official status. As you know, we're moving to Kobe, and we just had our application for a house rejected by the landlord. Mm-hmm. Because he sort of looked, and on paper it's two guys wanting to move in, and the landlord has just gone, well, we're hoping for a family to move in, a normal family.
Yeah.
And we're looking at the house and just going, I think it's been vacant for
probably years
because it's a 50-year-old house and there's no young families going to want to move into it.
Nothing to do with you being white at all.
Well, that's possibly part of it as well. Yeah, definitely. So we've sort of got a double whammy there because I'm a foreigner and we're two men.
Mm.
But the words of the landlord, as conveyed to us through the real estate agent, was they're waiting for a regular conventional family.
Right.
Good luck.
Okay. So last time you did the concluding remarks, but this time I'd like to ask Anthony a question and for him to do concluding remarks. Is that okay, Anthony?
Yeah,
can
absolutely.
You conclude our podcast?
Yeah.
Okay. So the final question is, right, there's probably plenty of people overseas who are homosexual, LGBT, whatever. I don't know all the terms. You were talking about like QIOA and stuff like that earlier. I don't know the full terms, but would you recommend that these people move to Japan or not fear Japan, or how would you describe Japan to those people, and what would you recommend they do?
Yeah, that's right. We did mention this at one point. I think there's a lot of areas in Japan. Yeah, come over, come and see it. I think just don't expect to be welcomed in the same terms. It's a completely different society, you know, for straight or gay. I don't think it really. But I've never I've never had aggressive discrimination here for being gay or for being white, for that matter, in the way that I have had aggressive discrimination back home. Like, I've never walked down the street and had someone yell out expletives or whatever in Japan. Certainly there's discrimination, as we just mentioned, with the house and whatever, so there's difficulties in whatever, and it may be difficult to lead an open gay life where you parade around in your hot pants or whatever, but no one has really interfered with my life, and so it's a kind of interference-free existence. And there's so many other great things here, and if you're in the gay community, you can have a lot of fun, I think, as well. But it's a very different experience. It's not going to be like your clubbing nightlife in London or in Sydney or San Francisco or Berlin or something. It's a totally different culture, and you know, there's a lot of new things to experience. So, yeah, come over, but just be ready to, experience new things.